From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dr. Stephen C. Meyer, director of the Center for Science and Culture at the Discovery Institute in Seattle, and author of Return of the God Hypothesis, three scientific discoveries that reveal the mind behind the universe. Now let's join Hank Hanegraaff and Dr. Stephen Meyer in their conversation.
Materialists would not expect to find that the universe had been finely tuned against all odds, and again, as I said before, for no underlying physical reason, to allow for the possibility of life. This fine-tuning that physicists refer to and sometimes call the Goldilocks universe, where all these fundamental parameters fall within very narrow ranges or tolerances that make life possible. Little tiny differences one way or another would render the universe a life-unfriendly place. And the odds of getting all of these things right is astronomically small. That's not something that you would expect on a materialistic worldview or on a naturalistic worldview. Sean Carroll, the famous physicist from Caltech, defines naturalism as a system of thought wherein eventually every event can be explained ultimately by the underlying laws of physics. But the laws of physics do not explain why what are called their constants have the precise values that they do, nor do they explain the exquisite fine-tuning of the initial conditions of the universe. So naturalism would not expect this kind of fine-tuning. And certainly a materialistic worldview, a naturalistic worldview, a Darwinian perspective, did not expect to find the exquisite informational complexity that we have discovered inside living cells. That complexity in the presence of digital code and information processing systems is completely unexpected on a naturalistic worldview. And you know that in part because the naturalistic theories of origins have been utterly incapable of accounting for the origin of precisely that information. So if you look at the three big discoveries that I address in the book, none of them are expected on a standard naturalistic or materialistic worldview. Scientific materialism of a kind that Dawkins defends and promulgates out into the culture is incapable of explaining those big three discoveries and certainly did not expect them.
Maybe it would be worthwhile to talk about the ideas that led so many people in Western civilization in particular to reject faith in God. The unguided chemical evolution as an explanation for the origin of life, and then unguided biological evolution as an explanation for the development of that life.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I tell a bit of the history of this in the third chapter of the book. I start by explaining that science began in its modern form in a decidedly Judeo-Christian context in Western Europe, and did so for decidedly Judeo-Christian reasons. The early scientists believed that nature was intelligible, that it could be understood, that it was worth studying systematically, because it was the product of a divine mind, the divine mind having built order and design and rationality into the universe such that we, with minds created in his image, could understand that order, design, and rationality. But we lost that perspective, largely lost it, in the late 19th century. And as scientists began to propose theories of how things came to be, theories of origin that made no reference to a designing intelligence or a creator of any kind, this started first in the field of astronomy when Pierre Laplace proposed an explanation for the origin of the solar system. It spread into the earth sciences and finally into biology, where Darwin proposed that he could explain the origin of new forms of life as a result of a purely unguided, undirected process known as natural selection. Not artificial selection, not intelligent design, but nature was doing the selecting and the guiding. And so that led very easily to a naturalistic worldview where nature seemed to be eternal, self-existent, and self-creating. And of course, Darwin's ideas were extended to explain the origin of human beings as well as other forms of animal and plant life, and extended in the other direction to, as you mentioned, explain the origin of the first life as a result of what are now called chemical evolutionary theories. So by the end of the 19th century into the early part of the 20th century, there was a sense that there was a kind of comprehensive narrative whereby scientists could explain how everything got here by undirected material processes, where that primordial matter, perhaps elementary particles and energy, was eternal and self-existent in just the same way that Jews and Christians always believed that God was the eternal self-existent thing from which everything else came. So every worldview has to answer that prime reality question, the question of what is the thing or entity from which everything else came. The theistic answer has always been God, a self-conscious person with will, intentions, and great power. The materialistic view is that there is no such person, personal source or intelligent source for the universe. It's not mind first, but rather it's matter first and matter existing eternally into the past. And so these theories of origins that gave plausibility to the materialistic narrative, the story of how everything came to be, eventually seemed to give strong support for that overall materialistic or atheistic worldview. And that became the default way of thinking among intellectuals by about the turn of the 20th century and throughout most of the past century, and in still a very dominant way of thinking in our time. But I think that is beginning to change, Alex Rosenberg notwithstanding. I think many scientists are seeing that these materialistic theories are inadequate, and many are opening their minds to the possibility that there is evidence of actual design in life in the universe. And thus, as I unpack the argument, the return of a God hypothesis.
Yeah, absolutely. And the subtitle, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe. Maybe you can do a bit of a dive into those three, the evidence from cosmology, from physics, and from biology.
Absolutely. I mean, this is what, for me, just absolutely fascinating. Let's take the first one, the discovery that the universe, as best we can tell, had a beginning. You go all the way back to the ancient Greeks, and there have been philosophical debates about whether the universe has always been here or whether it had a beginning. And it is one of the most remarkable things and a fantastic story that modern science has been able to answer that question to a fairly high degree of certainty. Not absolute proof, we don't get that in science, but as best we can tell, the evidence points to the universe having a beginning. And the story of that discovery begins in the 19-teens and 20s when astronomers first began to perceive that the light coming from very distant objects in the night sky, first called nebula and then later called galaxies, that the light coming from those distant objects was being stretched out. The wavelengths of the light were being stretched out so that they were longer than they should be if the objects in the night sky were a constant distance away from us. If you pass light through a prism, it will separate into different colors, red to violet. The red light corresponds to light with longer wavelengths, the violet with shorter. So the light coming from these distant galaxies was said to be red shifted. And this indicated that the galaxies were receding away from us. They were moving away from us, just as a train receding from us causes the pitch of the sound to go lower. That corresponds to a lower wavelength of the acoustic wave. The light coming from the distant galaxies was being stretched out. It was longer than it should be if the galaxies were a constant distance. And so that suggested that the universe was actually expanding. As more and more measurements were taken and observations made in different quadrants of the night sky, this phenomena continually manifested itself. And that suggested a universe that was expanding outward in a roughly spherical way, like a balloon. Now, if you wind the clock backwards in your mind eye, if you back extrapolate, if the universe is expanding outward in a spherically symmetric way, like a balloon being blown up, if you imagine what that balloon would have been like at any finite time back in the past, it would have been smaller and smaller and smaller the further back you go. And eventually, all that material would have been congealed. The material of the galaxies would have congealed at a single point past which you could not go. You couldn't back extrapolate any further. That point of coming together would mark the beginning of the expansion of the universe and arguably the beginning of the universe itself. Subsequent to that, there were other discoveries in observational astronomy, something called the cosmic background radiation that was discovered in 1965 that provided additional support for this idea. And especially important were developments in theoretical physics based on Einstein's new theory of gravity known as general relativity. His theory implied that matter actually curves the fabric of what he called space-time, that space is curved by a dense concentration of matter. In the 1960s, Stephen Hawking was thinking about this, studying black holes, and realized that if the universe was expanding in the forward direction of time, whereby matter would be getting more and more diffuse, if you backed the time sequence up in your mind's eye, the matter again would get more and more densely concentrated, but that would mean that the space of the universe would be getting more and more tightly curved until finally you would reach a limiting point going back in time where the density of matter would go to an infinite and the curvature of space would go to an infinite, at which point you could again go no further back. But that implied a universe that was literally coming out of what they call a spatial-temporal singularity. An infinite curvature corresponds to zero spatial volume. And so you get a picture of everything coming out of nothing in a infinitesimal flash of light and taking no time. It was, in fact, evidence of a creation event.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Stephen Meyer. Is there a God? After the 18th century, many powerful voices advanced the perception that science and Christian belief are at war, with scientific materialists proclaiming that science leaves no room for belief in God. In Return of the God Hypothesis, Dr. Stephen Meyer explains three scientific discoveries that revealed the mind behind the universe, indeed, a personal God. Return of the God Hypothesis offers breakthrough evidence of the ultimate mystery of the universe that will change the way you view the world around you forever. To receive your copy of Return of the God Hypothesis, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. The number of wolves surrounding the Christian flock is growing, and they relish nothing more than docile sheep utterly incapable of defending themselves. From militant secularists at home to militant Islamists abroad, the assaults on biblical Christianity are growing dangerously. But Christian Research Institute support team members aren't in favor of feeding these wolves. Instead, each day they're making possible an array of outreaches that defang these wolf packs with solid arguments and evidence that have stood the test of time. What's more, support team members are equipping themselves with CRI's Equipping Essentials, a hand-picked collection of the best apologetics tools around. Your selection of resources are just our way of saying thanks. To learn more about the benefits of membership, simply visit equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org.
Many intellectuals insist that science and belief in God are at war. In Return of the God Hypothesis, Stephen Meyer argues that theism, with its affirmation of a transcendent, intelligent, and active creator, best explains the evidence we have concerning biological and cosmological origins. Previously, Meyer refrained from attempting to answer questions about who might have designed life. Now he provides an evidence-based answer to the ultimate mystery of the universe. The results? Meyer reveals a stunning conclusion. The data support not just the existence of an intelligent designer of some kind, but the existence of a personal God. To receive your copy of Return of the God Hypothesis, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org. That's equip.org. Hank Hanegraaff has dedicated his life to defending truth because truth matters. However, his life and ministry were radically transformed by another three-word phrase, life matters more. Truth matters because Christianity is rooted in history and evidence. Life matters more because it is the experience of union with God. The goal of Christian life is union with God. All attempts to understand Christianity from a solely rational perspective put us in danger of devolving into a transactional rather than transformational relationship with God. Truth Matters, Life Matters More will equip you to move beyond intellectually knowing about God to experientially knowing Him in Christ. To receive your copy of Truth Matters, Life Matters More, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us online at equip.org.
Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Stephen Meyer, as they continue their conversation.
And especially important were developments in theoretical physics based on Einstein's new theory of gravity known as general relativity. His theory implied that matter actually curves the fabric of what he called space-time, that space is curved by a dense concentration of matter. In the 1960s, Stephen Hawking was thinking about this, studying black holes, and realized that if the universe was expanding in the forward direction of time, whereby matter would be getting more and more diffuse, if you backed the time sequence up in your mind's eye, the matter again would get more and more densely concentrated, but that would mean that the space of the universe would be getting more and more tightly curved until finally you would reach a limiting point going back in time where the density of matter would go to an infinite and the curvature of space would go to an infinite, at which point you could again go no further back. But that implied a universe that was literally coming out of what they call a spatial-temporal singularity. An infinite curvature corresponds to zero spatial volume. And so you get a picture of everything coming out of nothing in a infinitesimal flash of light and taking no time. It was, in fact, evidence of a creation event. So this is an absolutely fascinating story in astrophysics, astronomy, and cosmology. I should mention that there have been attempts to circumvent the conclusion of an absolute beginning, and they fall under the heading of something called quantum cosmology. And in the debate that I had with Krauss, he's a proponent of that idea. He wrote a book called Universe from Nothing. And I made an unexpected discovery as I was reading the technical papers upon which Krauss's popular book are based, and that is that these theories in quantum cosmology actually have their own theistic implications. As much as the whole enterprise was designed to try to circumvent the theistic implications of standard Big Bang cosmology, quantum cosmology, if true, has its own theistic implications. And we could discuss more about that, but this has been a long answer, so I'll stop.
I do want to press that for just a moment, because when Krauss says nothing, does he really mean nothing, or is he importing something else into that word?
Well, he absolutely is importing something else into that word. His hypothesis is developed in two phases, and one phase involves getting matter out of pre-existing space and energy, and clearly pre-existing space and energy are not nothing. But then prior to that, the space and the energy are thought to arise in quantum cosmology from a purely mathematical construct, from the laws of physics, the laws of quantum gravity, that are thought to pre-exist the origin of the physical universe of matter, space, time, and energy. And Krauss is, in his book, Universe from Nothing, popularizing the work of the great Russian physicist Alexander Vilenkin at Tufts University. And Vilenkin is a much more sensitive soul philosophically. And at the very end of his book, Many Worlds in One, he asks a very deep question, which is, prior to the existence of matter, space, time, and energy, what tablet could these laws of physics have been written on? After all, the laws of physics as we know them describe the action of matter and energy within space and time. If there's no matter and energy, space, or time, what are these physical laws? Well, he says they're purely mathematical. But pure math is conceptual. And concepts, mathematical or otherwise, exist in minds. And so he asks this very provocative rhetorical question at the end of the book. If prior to the universe, all that exists is mathematics, and therefore an idea, are we therefore saying that a mind predates the universe? After all, ideas, mathematical or otherwise, in our experience, only exist in minds. They don't exist floating around disembodied, if you will, or apart from minds to think them. And so one of the hidden theistic implications of quantum cosmology is that to explain the origin of the universe, the material universe, from math, is to imply that a mind predates the matter of the universe. In addition, the math that's used to explain the origin of the universe is something, this gets a little bit technical, but it's something called a universal wave function. And this is a mathematical entity that has an analogous form in ordinary quantum mechanics. And the idea here is the universal wave function is describing not all the different places a particle could be in a quantum mechanical system, but rather all the different gravitational fields associated with all the different universes that might emerge out of this mathematical description of possibilities. But to get that universal wave function, a big hairy equation has to be solved first, and that's something called the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, which is the analog of the famous Schrödinger equation in quantum mechanics. But to solve that equation, which has an infinite number of solutions, the physicists have to impose what are called boundary constraints on it. You can't get a definite solution without choosing constraints that limit degrees of mathematical freedom. And those constraints are chosen with a teleological end in mind. They want to solve the equation in such a way to get a universal wave function that includes our universe as one of the possibilities. If they do that, they think they will have explained the origin of the universe. But to fix those boundary constraints and thus solve the equation, the physicists have to arbitrarily make choices as to how they're going to constrain the degrees of mathematical freedom. When you use those type of equations in other branches of physics, usually there's a physical system that's being described that will allow you to establish what the boundary constraints are. There's no universe yet, so you have to choose those constraints, and those are chosen by the physicists themselves in a way that limits degrees of mathematical freedom. And that's another way of talking about the input of information. Whenever I say zero, not one, or one, not zero, this bit, not that, I'm imparting information. And if you have to fix these boundary constraints to limit an infinite number of solutions to get a specific solution out the other end, you're imparting a huge amount of information in order to get a specific and desired outcome. That's a way of modeling intelligent design. That's not the universe coming from nothing. In fact, I argue in the book, even if Krauss could explain the origin of matter and energy from pure mathematics, which is quite a trick, math doesn't have that power on its own apart from minds, he and other quantum cosmologists cannot explain the origin of the information necessary to get the math that does that explaining in the first place. So that information in their modeling is coming from a mind, that of a theoretical physicist. So I think the whole enterprise of quantum cosmology is presupposing a pre-existing mind, and indeed a mind that must impart information to give a universe with a finely tuned structure that makes life possible.
Yes, so Krauss is equivocating on the word nothing. Nothing doesn't really
mean nothing. It's definitely equivocating. But what's presupposed is not matter and energy, ultimately, but rather math and mind.
Yeah. Yeah. So again, the subtitle, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe, and you've camped on that first one, evidence from cosmology that suggests that the material universe had a beginning. What about physics? The evidence from physics that shows that from the beginning of the universe, there has been the fine tuning of the universe, which allows for the possibility of life.
Absolutely. This is one of the key evidences that has given defenders of scientific atheism heartburn. I have two colleagues that have debated the late Christopher Hitchens, David Berlinski and Jay Richards. And Hitchens said that the fine-tuning problem was the one that really made him uneasy. And he thought there was a lot there to worry about from an atheistic point of view. Here's the basic discovery. There are multiple parameters, physical parameters, that make it possible for life. And the strength of gravitational attraction, the strength of the other three main fundamental forces of physics, electromagnetism, the strong and weak nuclear forces. The ratios between some of those forces have to be precisely finely tuned to account, for example, the abundance of carbon in the universe. The masses of the elementary particles, the quarks, the electrons, have to fall within very narrow tolerances to make life possible. And the expansion rate of the universe, which is governed in part by an underlying force called the cosmological constant. This was something that Einstein realized must be in play, that if gravity were the only force in the universe, everything would collapse on itself into a great black hole. So there must be an outward pushing force that counteracts the force of gravity that accounts for why we have empty space between material bodies in the universe. And that this force known as the cosmological constant is exquisitely finely tuned. An accepted value, a commonly accepted value, is about 1 part in 10 to the 90th power. To put that in perspective, there are only 10 to the 80th elementary particles in the entire universe. So getting that one parameter correct by chance would be roughly the same odds as putting a blindfolded person out into space looking for one elementary particle, but not just in our universe, but in 10 billion universes our size. It would be the search space that would have to be traversed, and you'd have to find the particle by chance. And that would give you something of a sense of the odds of getting the fine-tuning of that one parameter, the cosmological constant, right. So there are all these different parameters. Fred Hoyle, the great astrophysicist who was initially an ardent scientific atheist and who dubbed the Big Bang theory the Big Bang as a pejorative to make fun of the idea of the universe having a beginning, was deeply shaken in his atheism by some of the fine-tuning parameters that he himself discovered, and later adopted a kind of proto-theistic position.
Well, we'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Stephen Meyer, author of Return of the God Hypothesis, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe. Our daily commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you Return of the God Hypothesis, Three Scientific Discoveries That Reveal the Mind Behind the Universe. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. Or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters and life matters more. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.